Welcome to The Lonely Marketer, sponsored by Pager. My name is Glenn Southam, and this is your show for all things recruitment marketing. We share the challenges, the successes, advice, and the screw-ups from the leading marketing talent working in recruitment. And most importantly, find out what their favourite swear word is. We speak to the companies working to make marketing recruitment more effective and efficient, and to those people who have opinions that make you think about things that little bit differently. You can find me on LinkedIn, and if you want to follow the bear, then head over to thelonelymarketers.com for links to all of our social channels and to sign up for our newsletter. But now, it's time for the show. Let's do this. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Lonely Marketer. It's been a while, so I might be a bit rusty in my interviewing skills, but I am delighted to have with me today Amity Watts. She's the Head of Marketing and Communication at Cubed Talent. It's been a while trying to get Amity on the show. I think going back to the early days of the coronavirus pandemic and lockdown version one, but you know, two, three, however many years, time is but an illusion at the moment. We finally got her on the show, so welcome, Amity.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, we got there in the end. We got there in the end.
We did.
So, I mentioned just then you're the Head of Marketing and Communication at Cubed Talent, but that's a very recent development at the time of recording, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been 2 months.
And prior to that, you have got experience in recruitment marketing. You spent a few years at Seven.
Yeah, 4 years with the guys at Seven. Yeah, love that job. Love those guys.
Yeah. So before when we were discussing the kind of what we should talk about and things, that's a little bit of insight into how much planning goes into these episodes. Literally discussed it yesterday. you said that you were quite keen to talk about your experience of moving roles, of being on the candidate side. We make a lot of assumptions about what that experience is like as marketers and try to kind of manage the candidate experience, but you know, I think this is useful both from a marketing point of view to understand it, but also for some people listening who, you know, who might be looking to make moves in their career. There is a lot of movement kind of in the market at the moment. It feels like an opportunity. So I suppose let's dive into kind of your recruitment experience. I suppose where it starts is, you know, what was the kind of the triggers to make you, you know, consider new opportunities, you know, in the first place?
For this role or for when I moved into recruitment 4 years ago?
I think for this role, the most recent.
Yeah. I wanted to make a big move. I was ready to make a big move. And those, you know, the reasons for that were, you know, probably quite personal, really. But I've got a young family. I've got three little people to think about, and you know, my youngest went to school last year, so, and it frees up some space in the brain, I think, and space in the life. I worked part-time at Seven 3 days a week for those 4 years I was there, and I think part-time work brings lots of benefits. I think there's this illusion of balance, but I think as an adult, I think it is an illusion, not just a parent, but for adults as well. I think it's, life comes at you fast and, you know, lots of things at the same time. And it's up to you to sort of prioritize. And that can be really difficult sometimes. But what small children force you to do is, you know, quite rightly put them first. And so I took the decision, you know, a few years ago when I went back into work to take a part-time job. I actually started looking for full-time work because I've always loved working and loved my job, but part-time was right at that time. 4 years later, things are different. And like I said, I was ready. I was ready for a big move, ready to move the sort of back into a leadership role. And I'm ready for a bigger agency, a bigger environment. And those are my motivations, really.
The new role now at Cubed Talent, have you gone back to full-time? Have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I said, right, I'm ready for this, but I want to try and make it work for me. So I do full-time, but over 4 days. So I do four long days, start at half seven till half five of my contracted hours, Tuesday to Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and in my conversations during my job search, I spoke to loads of recruiters and loads of businesses. I threw the net quite wide. I decided I had three avenues to explore. And so I spoke to lots of people, some amazing, really inspiring, expansive conversations. I really would advise anyone in a job search to do that. You know, you can learn so much just from conversations, let alone first stage interviews. So I threw the net quite wide. And in those conversations, I said, look, I am looking for full-time hours and happy to deliver on a full-time basis, but I will need flexibility and trust around how I make that work. And that wasn't a problem at all in my process with Cubed. You know, lots of people there work flexible hours. It's, you know, different for lots of people. And it was brilliant to see, really. I think there's a lot of hesitation on the working parent side. And I think about, you know, employees in general that are a bit scared to ask, maybe, and a bit hesitant of what might be thought of them, or that it will be a flat no. Or that, you know, the bosses won't like it. But you've got to be brave, I think, in asking for what you want, and secure enough in your accomplishments and being confident enough that you can do it. Yeah. And I think it does come with age, that, but I wish I'd been probably, you know, possibly a bit braver earlier on, maybe in my 20s to request it. And I really hope that people sort of those 10, 15 years behind me now, can be a bit more inspired to say, yeah, I can do this, but let's do it 4 days a week, or let's change it and make it work for me. Yeah. I think we should all be empowered to do that. We've got the tech to do it, and, you know, you build the relationships to ask for it and then sort of go do it. So yeah, yeah, I think we can all do it, not just working parents.
Yeah, it's really interesting the word that you use there in terms of, you know, you need to be brave to do it. It seems so wrong that should be the word that we describe, isn't it? It shouldn't need courage to ask for these things. I think, you know, there 100% is kind of a generational shift. You know, there's plenty of reports and studies out there talking about new people coming into the workplace who are looking at their you know, work-life balance, however you want to describe it, you know, their own well-being and things. I think it's important in that sense, though, is that you still have to know kind of what value that you're going to bring to a business. You know, what are those outputs going to be? What's you know, what all your efforts, what's that going to result into the business, rather than, you know, being completely focused on you, which is, that's fine and it's important, as you say, but you need that balance, don't you, to be able to not justify it, but, you know, it, you still need to work and you still need to achieve results, don't you? I think you said before we started recording, knowing kind of your worth is really important. I think you said before you even update your CV, and your self-worth, as we've mentioned, is very important, but your what is your worth to a business as well, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. I think I mean, knowing your worth is a big lesson in life, isn't it? It's a good bit of advice, and again comes with age a little bit, but yeah, I would say before you even write your CV and before even think about where you might want to go next, I think you've got to be quite secure in yourself of what you can do, even if you haven't quite done it yet. I think as well, there's a visualization piece in the candidate process as well. You are being sold the dream, but you've got to figure out your dream first and then see if they align. I found it really useful to think about personal values when I was thinking about changing jobs, because a lot of employment, it's about aligning values, isn't it? And I've written brand values for so many clients over the last 20 years. And I think I found it really useful to map out my own personal values, kind of some buzzwords, and make sure that I was aligning to those in all my conversations, in all my decisions, and all those steps forward as well. Yeah. So I think that's a really useful exercise. And courage was one of them, actually. I just reminded myself when I said it. Courage was one of them, to be brave enough to say what you can do and deliver as well. Yeah, it was. I think that's really useful exercise. Map out your own personal values.
Yeah. In terms of if we dive into the specifics of your recruitment experience, you said you opened the net wide, had plenty of conversations. Did you use recruitment agencies? Don't need to name any.
I have great experience with recruiters. I get a bit annoyed that it gets such a bad rap as an industry, because when I've been on the candidate side, I haven't seen that. And then obviously working in-house, I've only worked with ace recruiters. You know, they're real, like, absolute gods of client services and candidate experience at Seven and at Cube as well. So yeah, I don't, I'm not too, yeah, I'm not fond of that. I did use recruiters, but I also use my network. Obviously, since I've been working in recruitment marketing, I've met you and what you've done with the community, the Lonely Marketeers. I had a chat with a few people in that group as well. Mm-hmm. And it's really worth building your networks in your space, you know, while you sort of hone your craft and meet people doing the same thing as you. Yeah. And over the last 4 years, thanks to your community, actually, I've done that. So there were people on hand to ask advice and speak to, which was really, really useful. So yeah, it was a mixture of network. I did chat to a few recruiters because things that I applied for online, obviously that's who rang me immediately. But mainly in-house recruiters, I would say, or recruiters recruiting for their own business.
Yeah.
So you know, not necessarily their day job to speak to me. And I found that a lot. But a brilliant experience and a brilliant bunch of people. I just think it's so much, I think it's such a great industry. I think client service levels are brilliant across the board from what I see.
Yeah. You did describe it as a bit of a jungle out there, though, in terms of, I don't know, the recruitment world, job hunting. I don't know. What did you mean by that when you said
I think
that?
The way it's set up on LinkedIn, and the job boards, if you actually search online for what you think you might be looking for, so I was looking for head of marketing or marketing director, and you click apply, and then it goes nowhere, and you hear from nobody, and you think, hang on a minute, I'm bang on for that. It's local to me. There's not a single thing on that JD or that ad that I can't do. Nobody's rung me about that job. But then quite often the people that did get in touch with me were a bit far away from what I have done. Mm. And I just thought there's a bit of a disconnect here, the way jobs are advertised online. I mean pasted, the way jobs are pasted online. It's a bit of a broken system, I think. And all the most successful recruiters that I've worked with, they are, you know, really going much more niche than that. You know, it's about direct approach, think success.
Yeah.
Success with it. So yeah, when I said it's a jungle out there, I meant the initial overwhelm of the internet, and then I think when you start having conversations as well, you can, if you're not firmly rooted to what you can deliver, like we've said, I think you can get swayed like a bit of a leaf in the wind. Being sold sold a few dreams and invited into a few places, and I think you've got to be really firm with your direction.
Do you think after a few years of working in a job and going through this process, is there elements of the process, your own personal experience of looking on job boards, playing around on LinkedIn, having the conversations, are you taking elements of that now and bringing it into Cubed Talent? Just like there's must be tiny little nuggets that you're taking out here and there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd like to redesign the internet in general some days, wouldn't you?
Wow, so, that is an ultimate goal.
I know, for a goal-driven person. Yeah, I would, not just from a recruitment perspective, but oh my God, the distraction, the mess, the rabbit holes.
The noise, isn't it?
Oh, the noise. Yeah, that's a big word. Yeah, it's very difficult to focus. So yes, I am. We're talking about candidate experience a lot at Cube this week, actually. And 100%. It's really about speaking to people directly and trying to cut out the noise. Be respectful of the noise that they are dealing with, also, but try not to be noisy yourself.
Yeah.
I'm really focused on that, definitely, when building a plan for the rest of this year and into next year. It's how make our noise relevant, at the right level.
Cool. Right. This is now. Let's go back to then, previous to the world of recruitment marketing. Not to give ages away or anything like that. You spent the best part of a decade on the agency side.
I did.
What was that? Various roles like account management, account directors, stuff like that.
I worked at a big marketing agency. It was called Gratapalm at the time. It's Creative Race now. And they were one of the biggest agencies in the North. And I went in at 21 and I left at 30. I'm 40 now. I just might as well say it. what an immense experience. I'm so grateful for the time I spent there. Oh, hang on, I'm coughing. Lots of huge clients, consumer goods and retail. So much to learn in terms of brand building, strategy, above the line, you know, below the line, delivery, super fast paced, constant change, and then growth. I think the agency went from 50 or 60 heads to about 120 in the time that I was there. So that kind of startup vibe as well, and the constant change that comes with that. Learned a lot from the leadership. You know, there, met some of my best friends. It was a real formative experience that I'm grateful for every day at work and in my life as well. And I think there's nothing better than, for me, I'm an agency side person. I know there's always that, what's the word? Insecurity, I think, on agency side, that should you be going client side? Should you be getting that experience? How would it be? But for me, I'm supplier side all the way. My very first job was, I did go in-house at Asda House, into their marketing team, and worked for the summer as a marketing assistant. And I could see the agency people buzzing in and out with all their ideas and all their, you know, they were just like the buzziest, most exciting, most inspired people. And I thought, I want to be over there, you know, with that gang. And I went and got a job with one of Asda's, we were one of Asda's agencies. So, I think I'd recommend agency experience to anybody in marketing. I think it's really good for you.
You obviously talk very fondly about it, but you did leave the agency world. What was the triggers for that? Was that life, career, bit of both?
It was. When I had my second child, I thought, God, this is different. You know, life's going to have to change here. I'm changing. And I thought, I can't. As much as I loved it, it was a lot of hours to success and high expectations on the client side. And I thought I'm going to need to find something similar, but not the same, because I just knew how much it would annoy me to try and go back and not be able to do what I could do before. Mm. And I felt at that time in my life with two very little people here that I wasn't, you know, that I wasn't going to be able to do the same. So rather than set myself up to fail, I thought, think about something else. And like I said before, I did think, when a few years later I had another little person, you know, then went back into work. I did think, right, let's go back into full time for that, you know, sense of fulfillment, you know, the finances. But a few people said to me, do you know what, if you can manage for a few years, just don't kill yourself with it. You know, try to take it slow, you know, while life is so hectic. Mm. So that, you know, I went into the part time and I fell into the recruitment side of it. It was, you know,
most people do.
Yeah, who recommended. Yeah, and at first I didn't really know what it was all about, but I'm at heart a B2B marketeer, I'd say, these days. And I love that side. That really appealed to me. So I went into it thinking this is brilliant B2B experience here. I think that'll be really good for me. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that sold it, was recruitment to me.
My personal view in terms of, and we've spoke on this podcast multiple times in many episodes around marketing team setups, what they should look like. And for a long time, I've always felt is, even if you are in-house, in inverted commas, is if you can replicate a kind of an agency setup with your marketing function, it usually gets the best results. Did you take that kind of model and experience from your 10 years and try to apply that when you came in-house?
Yeah, definitely. I can't help but act like the agency, you know, even if it's just me, you know, the Lonely Marketeers, as you really aptly named it. I was the only marketeer in the room, and my approach was, right, let's just set this up like there's a big team of us doing this, and behave exactly how you do in agency, sort of, and plan it out like that. I can't help but do that, and that's why I think it's such good experience to work within those big teams and agencies, because then you can take that experience. I think the downside of it, though, is that you end up trying to do everything yourself. I think on agency side, there's a team, you know, there was always at least four of us, up to eight of us, working on a particular client when I was in marketing agency, as well as a team of designers as well. So, and then you move in house to a much smaller business, and you can see that all of these things could be done. But the reality is there's one of you, and you might be part-time like I was, and you've got to manage your expectations and the expectations of everyone around you as well. But yeah, that's what I really want to do at Cubed. Yeah, behave like the agency within the agency, without a doubt, yeah.
Just diving into that a little bit, what does that look like in reality on a practical level? Is that building those kind of specialist roles within the business? Is it, you know, utilizing agency / freelancers and special skills, combination of both?
I think it's about the mentality that marketing adopts within the business of the service that you're there to provide internally and externally. First of all, I think it's the mindset. Marketing's job is to be the eyes and ears of the business, the voice of the customer in the room. I learned that really early on. I think it was Asda that they actually had that line on their website, the eyes and ears of the business, and it's really stayed with me. So in terms of the nuts and bolts of what every person in the team should do, I think that completely depends on business goals. But what you've all got to have is that mindset of service delivery and customer, and that's how I would focus it. You've always got to be the voice of the customer.
I think there is an element is as long as you create that clarity in terms of what you're trying to achieve and the outcomes, how you get there is a little bit irrelevant. You know, obviously there are cost and budget considerations, but that, again, even budget and cost considerations are irrelevant if you have real clarity on what you're trying to achieve, because you know investment equals X. So
I've never worked on a project that's even the best planned project that hasn't been delivered quite differently to the way that I expected. You know, it's
usually taken longer and cost more.
definitely. It's always more. I don't think marketers do this. You take on a lot, and then you set the bar quite high, set the goals quite high, and then you underestimate perhaps the work and the input that's going to take to get there. So I think that's a really common thing in marketing. But also, if I have hit the goals or not hit the goals, the journey there has never been what I have expected. And I think that's where the learnings are as well, and that where the joy and the pain is in the process. The end goals, they're important. You know, we have to do that, you have to set that, but how you get there is really where you find yourself and everybody else as well, and I think that's where you learn the most.
It's interesting you said the journey there, and that comes up on, you know, lesser podcasts like the Diary of the CEO, where it talks about the enjoyment is in the journey, and I think that's so relatable to recruitment marketing. I don't think I've ever been elated when a website's launched, for example. You know, it was fun beforehand when you're doing the designing, you're getting the prototypes, you're testing, blah blah blah. When it's launched, you're a bit like, what now? It's
on not to the next not, thing.
Exactly, isn't it? So I think that kind of enjoying the journey of marketing projects and things like that is as important, probably more important than obsessing over what final goal and outcome is, because if you can enjoy the journey, the outcome and things is probably likely to take care of itself, isn't it?
It really does. Yeah. I really think that. I really agree. Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, coming back, you obviously left the agency side. You know, you stumbled, fell, whatever, into the world of recruitment, and been in this world, if you like, now for a few years. Just want to get a kind of idea of what do you think's kind of changed in that time from your experience, and then kind of moving forward, you know, what do you see the role of marketing being? Because I think, again, we've said it a lot, I think COVID has changed the landscape in, you know, more ways than one, you know, not just marketing. But how do you think, you know, marketing within recruitment has changed over the past few years, and what do you see and or want it to look like, you know, going into your new role at Cubed and moving forward?
I think recruitment marketing, I think I said this in my job interview at Cubed, actually, that it's, I think it's a really exciting space to be in, because of the explosion of employer branding, the import, mm-hmm. and the importance of that. You know, the fight for, the war for talent, as they love to call it. I hate that phrase. Probably I've just said it. I think that, you know, all the considerations that we know about. But I think the world has sped up and it continues to speed up. And I think what a good marketeer and what's needed for success is the ability to slow things down a little bit as well. In the recruitment agency, like a marketing agency, it's very fast, isn't it? Onto the next thing, onto the next thing, hit those goals on what's next, plans. I think it's a real underrated skill that we all need to work on, to have that ability to slow ourselves down and get back inside the mind of the customer, to really think, are we doing the right thing? Are we going in the right direction? So whilst the world, to answer your question sorry, more directly, yes, things have changed. And I think it's how we adapt to that change that dictates how well we do going forward. I think recruitment marketing, it's a much more respected area. There's much more buzz around it. I think there's more recognition across recruitment of the role of marketing. And you can see that from the, you know, the growth of team. You know, you've mentioned the growth of your team, but you see a lot of recruitment agencies on LinkedIn shouting about how many people they're bringing into their marketing team. So there's the proof of that. But I think what marketing really has to offer is that in-depth knowledge of the customer, inside the customer's brain. You've got to be doing that.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, 100%. I think you tend to agree. I think it's that respect that I've noticed. Then it's up to us to not take that respect for granted and really drive the value of our businesses. The fact that are you the lonely marketer at Cubed at the moment?
Yeah, I am at the moment. There's a few of us freelancing, and I have some support, definitely. But it's me, heading it up. Yeah.
But in years gone by, you know, people with kind of your level of experience and things, they'd never be a first, in inverted commas, kind of marketing hire for a recruitment business. It usually would be a marketing assistant, and that is the case in some businesses, and you know, it is what it is. But I think the forward thinking recruitment businesses are looking at marketing as that strategic function that does create value, and as such it requires people with the skills and the experiences to head it up, rather than an inverted commas support function.
Yeah, definitely. I think I see my role, I got quite caught up a couple of years ago with not having a team, you know, because I'd worked in the agency with a big team always, you know, was an account director with a team, and going into a much smaller businesses between 20 and 30 people, that's not realistic, and you can't expect that from the off. But what I think is really important to do is to install a sense of marketing in everybody. You need to make everyone your team, really. So there's less than 30, just under 30 of us at Cubed, and they're very marketing focused bunch, I would say. You know, they totally get it and really into it. And I think it's my job to kind of harness that and enable those capabilities in everybody, because so much of the recruitment process is marketing. And it is that marketing skill set. And I think the best thing a marketer can do is to give everybody a toolkit, if you like, to kind of help them to realize that and then enable them all with that marketing toolkit and then and make everyone your team. You know, everyone's in sales and everyone's in marketing. In a small business, there's no excuse on either side to be not, you know, just think that you're one or the other.
Less doing and more showing, I think, isn't it?
Yeah,
from our point of view.
Yeah. That you, and then as the lonely marketeer, you don't have to do everything. You know, you don't take it all on yourself. It's your job really to install those skills in others, or you know, enable them, because I think they're already there in a lot of people.
I agree. Just before we get into the five questions, you know, you've mentioned your three little people a couple of times, and again, I think there's kind of a changing demographic of marketers working in recruitment. You know, I know this from my kind of own network. There's more and more people with children and stuff. What's kind of been your experience as a working parent? Obviously, you've managed to, you know, be flexible with your days and your time and things. But, you know, at that personal level, what are the challenges you've kind of encountered? You know, the plus points of working and having kids as well and things, but and making time for yourself and stuff like that. I think there'll be a few people listening in similar boats, but just your experience of being that working parent.
I do think it's a journey, like everything, isn't it? When you've got young people, you are evolving yourself really, really fast. For me, I've struggled to not treat parenthood like a job. You know, I loved my job, my career before I had children. It was a huge part of my identity, and then to kind of drop it and go, you know, in and out of maternity leave for a few years, and then to find myself at home and I completely handed my notice in with three young children. It was a huge challenge to my self-perception and my self-worth as well, and a big lesson in how much of your self-worth is tied up in your career and your profession and what you deliver for somebody else. What I struggle with, I think I'm getting better at this now, is to not, parenthood isn't another job. It's not something that I need to be good at. I don't need to go to bed with a sense of satisfaction that I've delivered on something for the kids during the day. It's just not like that. But I think being trained, you know, in a commercial and corporate environment from a young age, and I do enjoy working in that environment and it does suit me. It's quite hard to drop that at home and not, treat it like a job as well. So I think that's a journey. I think one of the reasons I said I wanted to do the four long days, although, you know, 7:30 to 5:30, it's a shift. It is a shift in front of a computer. But my husband's a chef, so he laughs at me and says it's nothing because he's done 12 hours a day on his feet, you know, for 35 years or something. So not to him, but, you know, for us, I think it is. But then what I promised myself on my Mondays is that I would do something that reminds me of who I am. You know, if that's, for me, that's going, you might go to the climbing wall or go to yoga or, you know, go for a big run or, you know, things that float my boat, they're different for everybody. But I promise myself on that day, I'm not here to just catch up on the housework. And I'm not here to kind of do kid admin or, you know, life admin. I don't just exist for that. None of us do. So I promise myself to do something fulfilling and good with that time that I've got on those Mondays when everyone's at school. That's how I'm attacking it going forward.
But like you say, that again, that's kind of a journey, isn't it? And, you know, as two parents speak in here, is this journey really doesn't have an end goal. We know that there's no end goal with this, so you have to try and enjoy the journey. It's not, you know, you're always going to be a parent. That's the thing. That's never going to change.
And that obviously there's a lot of joy and beauty in it as well. And I think at work we talk a lot about how hard it is, but it's not all, you know, you have to enjoy the little things and stop and you know, live in the moment with them as well. It's really important to do that. I do think, though, going back to what you said at the beginning of this question, that you feel like there's more parents or more people with kids, or I think there always were. Just think that it wasn't the done thing to talk about your kids at work, and it wasn't the done thing to, you know, ask for flexibility because you were a parent. People have always had kids in the workplace, you know, And that's just the way it is. I think now what there has been is a softening of boundaries, not just because of COVID, over the last 20, 25 years, probably around home life, work. I think there has been a softening and a calming of, you know, it's not such a hard boundary, I think.
Completely. And, you know, I think some employers have realized that, you know, and I think I mentioned earlier is that whole kind of like work-life balance. It's a little bit of a phrase that does make my teeth itch a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not right.
You don't have work and life. You have life. You have your life, don't you?
Yeah,
and I think, you know, those employers are realizing that, and that flexibility is coming in. You know, I took Arthur, my son, into the office for the morning this week. Thankfully he's really well behaved, just stuffed in with Nutellas and chocolate croissants, but
the dream.
But you know, from a recruitment point of view, I could never imagine me doing that when I first started 15 years ago or something that. So I think it is a positive, you know, just generally, you know, despite all the negativity and stuff that we sometimes see there in that noisy world, like you mentioned, of social media. I think if you do get the chance as an individual to step back, reflect, practice a little bit of kind of gratitude and things, you'll realize that more often than not, you know, things are okay, aren't they?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Oh, everything is figureoutable. Yeah.
That is a word. Figure outable.
there's a book with that title, I think.
Yeah, there is.
It's never, it's never the end, you know.
No.
And so I think sometimes if you're having a hard day as well, I learned a good phrase once: if you think you're at the end of the rope, tie the knot and hang on.
I love it.
it's never the end.
Excellent. Cool. Right, let's get into the five quick fire questions. You said that you're quite brand led. So sometimes this question's quite hard for brand led people because they overthink what a brand is and means. But what's your favorite brand?
I'm going to go for Pucker Tees. And I haven't overthought it actually, because the reasons why I love them are very simple. The packaging is just it's so well done. It's so pretty. It looks amazing in my cupboard. My husband is a minimalist, being a chef, with the cupboards, and likes to clear all the teas out and put them in one jar. And it really annoys me, because the whole point of a pucker is I like to see that sort of, you know, three or four of them in a row looking really beautiful. And really, herbal tea is herbal tea, isn't it? We can't get too excited. I am a herbal tea drinker, but I just think that brand, you know, what they do and say and inspire with their packaging, that sense of calm. Probably I'm getting a bit too deep in it now, of like why you might be drinking herbal tea in the first place. I think it's summed up in the way that it looks and sounds and feels. I just think it's bang on.
There you go. Pucker Tees. Favorite sound?
I've been thinking about this since the first time I listened to one of your podcasts a few years ago. This is so embarrassing, but I'm going to say it. You know that Craig David and Artful Dodger tune with the boink in it?
Rewind.
Oh my god, that's it. That boink sound, I just love it. I think it's the happy memories attached to the song again.
I think we're of similar ages, and it's kind of one of those songs where we probably were just about legal to go into clubs, but it was there, wasn't it?
It was there,
old school garage.
Yeah, the Boulevard in Ealing, West London, was Destiny's in Watford. Yeah, maybe someone listening will understand that. But yeah, how embarrassing, but I love that noise, that sound.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have that in my head for the rest of the day. I might try and dig out a pure Garage One CD from the loft and put it on. So you've obviously been in marketing for pretty much all of your career. If you could do any kind of dream job, you know, money's not an object, you get to live the life that you want to do, what would it be?
Oh, this is super cheesy, you know, but I think the job I do is what's meant for me. I was very lucky, you know, falling into what I fell into at 21, where I thought, I really like this. It's a good match of my skills. I enjoy doing it. I'm good at it, and that makes me feel good. And like I said, met some great people along the way. And honestly, thinking about it, there isn't anything else that I would want to do. I think if I was to go back to the beginning, I'm a writer. That's my main, you know, skill. I would perhaps in another life been a writer, and I thought about being a teacher. But what I've ended up doing has ticked all the boxes for me. It really has.
Now, segueing off that, you mentioned a writer there. What, like novels?
Oh yeah, I definitely got a book in me. Definitely.
You've got a book in you. You haven't got any time. That's the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. I would love to. But I just really enjoy writing. I enjoy the corporate copy. I enjoy all the copy that I write for work. That's my creative skill. So. Yeah,
powerful though, isn't it? Words are powerful. So,
I love it. Yeah. I'm the words and pictures person, definitely. Yeah.
There we go. What about a bit of kind of tech or software that you know you couldn't live without, whether in your work life or in your personal life?
Do you know what? You can keep it. I understand the role of tech. It's omnipresent. It's really important. It's enabling. It's empowering. Yeah. It's inspiring. You know, and I wouldn't get rid of it. But I think when it comes to just life, I like to put it down. I do. Nice. Give me the trees, Glenn. Honestly, I want to throw my phone out the window most days. Put me in the forest.
Give me the trees. I love it.
Oh, really? Honestly. But I don't want to be ignorant. I think tech is everything now. I'm not sure sometimes whether we're an extension of our phones or whether our phones are an extension of us.
It's a very good point. Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. It's just we live in the age of technology and that's fine. But for me, those soft skills that get you through life and work as well, I think it's a case of putting it down and thinking about what you actually are.
And again, I think a lot of people have to force themselves to do it. It's something that until you force yourself to do it, sometimes you don't realize how attached you can be to it. Even simple things, just all the phones do it now. In a weird way, the phones are actually telling you to stop doing stuff. You know, there's lots of functionality around do not disturbs and focus time and things. Utilize it and you'll immediately realize it's like, oh, I'm not getting any notifications.
I think with phones and social, you've got to use it as an employee. Don't let it be your boss. That's what you got to do. I read a disgusting statistic last week that the average adult picks up their phone 1500 times a week.
That's
I felt scary, seen. I felt seen and a little bit upset.
That's crazy. It's crazy. I don't think we've swore once in this episode, but do you have a favorite swear word?
Well, now I live with a chef, so it's a constant battle to not have the swearing in front of the children, and then also working in recruitment the last few years, big sweary environment also. And I don't mind a good swear. I like all of them, really. I think used in, like I said, being a wordsmith, you might think this too. I think used in the right place, there is nothing better than any of them, really. I don't have a favourite. Most of my life, I haven't even answered these questions very well, have I? But most of my life's about trying to reduce the swearing in front of the children. Try not to resort to it in other situations as well.
Have you got code words between you and your husband for swearing?
No, he just says them. He just says them, and I say, "Don't say that." And then the kids go, "Daddy said shit."
There we go. We got one out of you. We got a swear word out of you. That's brilliant. Cool. Amity, it's been a long time coming, but I think it would be worth the wait. I think, digging into all of your experience, both work-wise and personal in terms of working parent, thank you for being kind of so open and honest. Lots of advice, lots of takeaways for people. So I hope that everyone enjoys the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Glenn.
I will speak to everyone very soon. It's good to be back.